Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Now, on the 10th of June this year, Prince Philip will turn 100 years old. In his latest book, titled The Duke, our first guest sets out to explore the man behind the various myths, drawing on interviews with relations, friends and courtiers, as well as Prince Philip's own words. Welcome to the show, Ian Lloyd.
Hello, Selena. Hi, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too. Now, 100 is a really great achievement. Do you think you'll get a telegram from the Queen?
I haven't thought about that. I mean, the Queen Mother, when she was 100, they did get a little van to go from Buckingham Palace just a few hundred yards to where the Queen Mum lived, and she opened hers in the street in front of everybody. So, yeah, I suppose she could hand it at breakfast, couldn't she, just say, there you are.
Yes, here you go, husband, yeah. In all seriousness, have you interviewed him, and if so, what do you think of him as a person?
Oh, I've not interviewed him, no. He's only ever given a very few interviews, and that's what's so fascinating about Prince Philip. Is a bit like the Queen, he still has an air of mystery about him. Whereas the under royals, they tend to, we kind of know quite a lot about them, you know, from various interviews, and they've poured their hearts out at times, but Philip is very much a kind of buttoned-up character. I mean, when he was 90, they had all these programs on the TV, and they tried to get him to talk about his legacy and so on, and he wouldn't give anything. It's like getting blood out of a stone. I mean, he just hates talking about himself, and he doesn't, you know, he's that generation. You don't, you know.
Yeah, very private.
Yeah.
Well, you've managed to find out some little gems, and one of them being that he has a fascination with UFOs.
Yeah, it was started, I think there was a general fascination in the late 40s, early 50s, that there was reported sightings, and it was taken very seriously. And even the Prime Minister at the time, Winston Churchill, asked for a report, you know, just to see what people were seeing. And Philip's uncle, Earl Mountbatten of Burma, had a member of his staff, very reputable man working for him, who claimed to have seen a UFO over where Lord Mountbatten lived. But Philip's taken the fascination with it and has taken it seriously. He doesn't know whether he actually believes it, but he's somebody that likes to investigate various things, you know what I mean? So he would,
yeah.
He's taken magazines and so on and read and researched it just to see what people are saying and so on.
The other thing, or a couple of the other things you've managed to find out, and I'm intrigued to know how you found these out, but he's got a big love of both poetry and religion.
Yeah, it's come across from, I've never been into his library. He's got a library at Buckingham Palace, a study, I should say, and people over the years have counted the books, and there are several hundred books of poetry and religion. And it's a sensitive side that I think he's kind of keen to play down. He doesn't really talk about that kind of thing, but I know he likes the poetry of Dylan Thomas, for instance, the Welsh poet. And as to religion, I mean, he is a practicing Christian. He goes to church like the Queen regularly and always has done. And a few years ago, sent a memo around Buckingham Palace that it was his own sort of analysis, and he put what Christ means to us. And he'd written a kind of essay, if you like, and then passed it round the royal household. And one guy in there had told me that, you know, he's not, this man, this courtier was not particularly an emotional chap, but felt very moved by reading it, that Philip had done it. So he has got a sensitive side that, as I said, we don't tend to know too much about.
Yes, yeah. I can imagine, actually, because we just see the public figure, don't we? And we see,
yeah,
programmes, you know, The Crown and things like that. But there must be a different side to him.
He doesn't watch, by the way. He claims, somebody asked him, they said, do you watch The Crown, sir? And he said, good God, no. bother with that rubbish. I don't think he's a great fan of the Crown.
No, he probably wouldn't admit it even if he did sneak a little look.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
And tell us about his fondness for Duke Ellington.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite funny, two Dukes together, isn't it?
But yeah.
Duke of Edinburgh likes Duke Ellington, the American composer, band leader. And one of his favourite songs is Take the A-Train, which I must admit I don't know, but it was one of Philip's favourites. And Duke Ellington came to Britain, well, several times, but he was once invited to the Leeds Music Festival in the late 50s. And played it for Philip then, and afterwards at the meet and greet, Duke Ellington met the Queen and was so bowled over by how gorgeous and glamorous she was in those days that he composed a piece called The Queen's Suite.
Oh.
And he had just one LP made of it, one pressing or whatever you call it, and he sent it to her at Buckingham Palace, and that was supposed to be it. But after he died in 1973, it was release. Somebody must have found the composition, and it was released, so we can hear it now. But there was a time when it was quite private. But you wouldn't imagine he'd have an interest in jazz. I didn't know that, Clarissa.
No.
I have to say.
I wouldn't have thought that either. Very interesting. And you mentioned about courtiers. In order to get the information that you've managed to find, did you speak to courtiers and friends and possibly relatives?
Yes, I have to say I started this book many years ago, doing one on the Queen, which I'd still not kind of finished, but I've amassed quite a bit of information at the same time about Philip. So I spoke to, for instance, Lady Pamela Hicks, who's Prince Philip's first cousin. She's the daughter of Earl Mountbatten of Burma, and to her late sister, Countess Mountbatten. They were very keen to emphasise the role that he played, because he obviously sometimes gets a bad press, you know, because of his gaffes and a kind of abruptness. You know, they tend to sometimes think he's the press love to concentrate on that angle, but they did, both of them were keen to emphasise the contribution that he'd made. Countess Mountbatten said that the Queen, given her sort of sense of duty, she would have done the job fantastically had she not married Prince Philip. But the fact she did is he's been her, what the Queen refers to, her strength and stay. He's the person behind the throne. And when you see them together, which I have done many, many times, is the Queen is the dutiful one, obviously. She walks ahead in the, when they're visiting a town or a city, she'll walk ahead with the Lord Mayor and the Sheriff and all of that. Philip's the one behind that ducks and dives into the crowd, and you can usually tell where he is because there's loads of laughter. I mean, he always says if he can't make every sixth person laugh, then he knows he's failed. And, particularly gets on with packs of school children and, families, obviously, but and sometimes his trick, I've seen many a time, is if there's a little kid behind the barrier that's got a present for the Queen or flowers, he'll actually pick him up himself, lift this child over the barrier and send him off to the Queen, which he's not really supposed to do, but obviously he can. So he kind of, basically, I think he eases the tension. There's loads of tension when the Queen's around because she's the Queen, and, it's quite nerve-wracking for a lot of people. And so he kind of lightens the load for her in many ways, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like he has really got a softer side.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the other thing that I've found is that he'd written letters to people. He's a great letter writer. The Queen isn't as good. She's not very good at expressing her emotions to people. There's a story that somebody said, that I think that was Lady Mountbatten, that this person had lost a corgi, not a corgi, but a big fun, this person had lost a dog, and the Queen wrote a six-page letter to this person about the dog, but when she'd lost a member of the family, the Queen didn't write. So the Queen's good at animals, I think. But Prince Philip, on the other hand, he's very good at writing letters. I mean, the letters to Diana after Diana split with Charles is very concerning. It's very he tried his best, and Diana said, you've got great skills as a marriage counsellor, and he's going, I don't know about that, but I try my best. They were very supportive letters.
Wow.
And he is able to express himself on paper, which, again, you wouldn't necessarily expect. You'd imagine a terse message saying, you know, put yourself together. But he does. And there's a letter I read that it's somebody that he didn't really know very well, but it's somebody in the sailing community that he'd heard was dying of cancer. So he put a very constructive letter, positive letter to this man, and enclosed a Royal Honour. Because this man had done a lot of charity work, so he bypassed the system by doing that, if you see what I mean.
That
again is a sensitive side that I hadn't realised.
No, I hadn't, and that's lovely, but some things I have read are a bit different in that, I mean, everyone's got two sides, but the Archbishop of Canterbury thought he was quite rude. Why did he think that?
Yeah, that was at Charles's. This is the Archbishop that married Princess Anne. What was he called?
Robert Runcie, no?
No, it's before him. It was Archbishop Ramsay.
Right,
late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
He was at Charles, he officiated at Windsor at Charles's confirmation. Prince Charles was confirmed at St. George's, and Philip sat there with a copy of, it's either the Bible or the prayer book, but instead of attending to the service, he sat there reading the book, you know, obviously turning the pages during the bishop's sermon. And the Archbishop apparently later said, "That's bloody rude, that's what I call it." which you wouldn't expect an Archbishop to say.
No.
You know, it must be daunting, again, preaching in front of the Queen, but when you're preaching in front of somebody that's sitting there reading a book and not making much attention.
That just sounds like one of his many gaffes to me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, there is a Queen Mother had a cartoon done by Sir, what was he called? Sir Hugh Casson, who was an artist, and he is a cartoon of this Prince Philip bearing down on this this priest who's sort of preaching for the Queen, because the thing is with Prince Philip, he's got one of those searching minds, you know what I mean? So if the vicar, you know, the priest rather sits next to the Queen Mother, she would say something lovely like, "Oh, you know, that was a beautiful service, I really enjoyed it." Prince Philip would take him up on a point in the sermon and really hammer it home, do you know what I mean? So it's kind of daunting meeting him, I think.
Yeah, she labelled him the Hun, didn't she, the Queen Mother?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not altogether seriously, but they did have a problem. When Philip joined the royal family, or was about to join the royal family in the late 40s, I mean, obviously there'd just been 6 years of war, you know. And the war finished in the Far East in August of 45. In August of 46, Philip was at Balmoral courting the princess, and the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, later the Queen Mum, hated the Germans, not just because of that war, but because of the First World War, where her brother Fergus was killed, and she was really anti-German all her life. And Philip's had four sisters, and they all married Germans. And two of his sisters actually joined the Nazi Party in the 1930s. And one of Philip's brother-in-laws, Prince Christopher of Hesse, he was in the SS, you know, in the not the SS. It was the I've forgotten what he did now, but it was Hitler's Air Force, the Luftwaffe.
Right. Yes.
And at one particular point in Italy, Philip, who was with the British Royal Navy, was actually fighting Prince Christopher because he was on the other side. They were in Italy at the same time. They worked that out. But he was killed in 1943, Prince Christopher. And so there was a lot of opposition. And one of the courtiers referred to him as Charlie Kraut. That's Prince Philip. And so the Nazi link was quite worrying, I think. So
yeah.
Philip's sisters weren't invited to the wedding.
Oh.
But yeah, the Queen Mother referred to him as the Hun, but I think it was sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it did go on for most of the night. So,
which was a long time.
A bit thin after 50
yeah,
years.
Yeah, I'm sure. And apparently Sarah Ferguson was a little afraid of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was kind of intimidated. So, Fergie is somebody that would speak her mind, not in a nasty way, but just kind of in a, what's the word, kind of like, you know, she would just not think before putting a foot in it.
Yeah.
And I think she found Philip rather intimidating. There's a story of them at Windsor when they were walking through this corridor, and there was a door to the kitchen, and Fergie noticed somebody she knew. I think it was the butler or the steward or something, and she kind of gave him a kind of big wave, hiya, which is very Fergie-ish, and Philip sort of said, why on earth are you doing that? You know, he couldn't understand why she was sort of fraternizing with somebody like that. So he's, I think he was a bit stern with her, but I did find out from somebody that they still now actually do meet. There's a great thing that he's frozen her out, but actually they do occasionally, well, COVID, you know, allowing.
Yes, yes,
pre-COVID. Fergie will occasionally go to Windsor and have dinner with them. So I think, and we saw that with the wedding of Princess Eugenie a couple of years ago, that they were next to each other in the photographs.
Nice. And I've got just a couple more questions, but I don't know if these are rumours or not. I've got that in some European outlets, they claim he fathered 24 illegitimate children.
What that was I was talking really about the press at that stage, and Prince Philip hates the British press now, but at one time the British press was fairly respectable and deferential, and it was the European press that was the problem, and they always got their facts wrong. They always said, I think somebody added them up once, and the Queen is supposed to have been pregnant about 64 times in the 1950s and 60s. In other words, you know, they'll launch a new rumour, you know. I mean, there's one quite funnily at the moment, I don't know whether you saw it on the news, but in Australia somebody's put about Harry and Meghan putting it's over, meaning their marriage, you know. And this came out the day that they've announced they're having a second baby. So the papers obviously do get it wrong, but they thought that was referring to it. I think it was a German newspaper, and they'd approach Buckingham Palace and about a rumour that what they thought was 24 illegitimate children, and the palace had approved this story, but in actual fact it wasn't illegitimate children, it was godchildren. So had 24 godchildren, and of course the palace said, yes, I think that's correct. And so they printed it. They couldn't believe they got this exclusive that...
Oh dear, that is a gaffe. So he didn't have a fling with a former French president either then?
No, that was, there's a rumour that he had one. I think it was Valerie I can't say it now. It was one in the 70s, the French Prime Minister. There's supposedly, again, somebody insisted that, to sell a newspaper, they insisted that Prince Philip had an affair with a male president of France, which, if he did, there's not any proof of it at all.
Well, there's this and so much more. It's a fascinating read. It's called It's called The Duke, 100 Chapters in the Life of Prince Philip by Ian Lloyd, who we're speaking to now. And as always, we're selling it on our website. Ian, do you have a website as well?
It's www.ianlloyd.uk.
Wonderful. Well, listen, you stay safe, and thank you for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you ever so much, Lena.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.